This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, flying solo from our Lexington studios this evening as Christina McManigal, my usual entry mate, co-host here on the program, needed a little time away for this evening's program. So you're stuck with me for the next hour. You are also stuck with jockey Taylor Rice, and this is going to be a really fun hour. Looking forward to the visit coming up here in just a few minutes. But before we do get started, want to welcome everybody to the program, tuning in throughout HRN Nation on Sirius XM, Sirius 220, XM 206, and everyone listening worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Each and every week, a portion of the proceeds from this show are given back to benefit the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. We encourage you to support the PDJF by going to pdjf.org. Well, I mentioned our guest tonight, jockey Taylor Rice. She has recorded 167 wins in a career that is really just getting rolling. She has earned over $6 million in purses, and she is with us now on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Taylor, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, happy to have you on board and looking forward to hearing your story. And I mentioned those 167 wins. You only started riding a couple of years ago, so that's an impressive number.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a journey, that's for sure.
What's the most rewarding part so far?
I love horses, so just getting out there and being able to ride, and I mean, winning races is always makes it better. But getting to ride nice horses for nice people, it's always a lot of fun.
What's been the key to getting off to that fast start the past couple of years?
I've got a lot of influences in my corner, you know, and people along the way have given me a lot of good advice. I've picked pretty good spots. I went to Chicago first before I came to New York and got some experience, a lot of great experience out there. A lot of trainers, they really supported me, and I win like 41 races in 2 months while I was out there. Come back to New York, and I just took off with my bug, with my apprentice, and it's been a whirlwind since then, for sure.
So many young jockeys that joined us on this program over the past couple of months have told me that one of the keys is kind of keeping your nose to the grindstone, so to speak, and staying focused and really working your tail off and outworking other riders to get those mounts. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about hard work and, you know, owner, trainers and grooms and hollows. I mean, everybody's out there all day long, you know, from before dawn to late in the evenings working hard. And if they don't see, you know, their jockey also out there, you know, putting in the work, they, you know, it just doesn't sit well. It's one of those things where you can't, even with success, you've got to just keep going, because you never know, tomorrow's another day, and you could ride one bad race, and it just puts a bad taste in someone's mouth. And if you don't go back to the barn and keep on top of them, you know, hey, I'm sorry, you know, I need to correct this, need to correct that, they could just write you off and move on to the next jockey. There's always another jockey knocking on the corner, you know, hey, you know, give me a shot, and you have to hold your position.
Yeah, and let's face it, being a jockey is a male-dominated profession, but you are among several female riders that are extremely talented. Do you find that as a female breaking into the sport, into that profession, that maybe you have to work a little bit harder, or does that drive you a little bit more?
In certain situations, I feel like I've gotten a pretty fair chance. I'm a hard worker, and so, you know, I've always been the girl amongst the guys, so that's not really, like, it's not an odd place for me to be. I don't necessarily take notice to it all the time, but I know that they're I've run into certain trainers that they just won't ride girl jockeys for whatever reason, whether they think that they're, you know, not as strong and not as this, but, I mean, I can stand up next to, you know, almost every jockey in our room here, and you know, like, my arm's the same size as theirs, it's not bigger. Like, you can't tell me I can't hold the same horse. I go out there and gallop horses and everything else, and it's like, you know, when it really comes down to it, like, I promise you, they're not stronger than me. They may have this or that, but it's all about convincing them. You know, they're people. Everybody, all these trainers, they're human beings, and if you can go and talk to them, you know, sometimes you can convince them that, you know, to give you a shot, and it's all about proving yourself. If you don't get the opportunity to prove yourself, they can't see it, but if you, the opportunity arises and you don't show up, well, then you fall to the wayside too.
Yeah.
Gotta stick to it.
Yeah, if people don't think female riders are strong, they're sadly mistaken. Sophie Doyle joined us on this program back in October, and if you got to look at the arms on Sophie Doyle, they are all muscle, and I'm going to assume you're very much the same way. I can remember getting a chance to meet you in person this past year at Saratoga at one of the charity events for PDJF, and that's the first thing that you notice is how fit not only male riders are, but females especially, and you do have to kind of have that edge physically as well as mentally, right?
Absolutely. And I don't know if it's necessarily a girl versus guy thing, but everybody has their niche and what they're good at, I feel like, as a jockey. And, you know, for me, I think one of my strong points is I'm very patient with horses, and I like to try to make them happy. And if I have quiet hands, my dad always, you know, really, really focused. You keep your hands down, stay out of their mouth, keep them quiet, keeps your horse more happy. And, you know, he always told me, he's like, you're small. These are 1,000-pound animals. He says, you're not going to be strong enough to just tell them what to do. You got to kind of talk them into it. And, you know, I guess that's where we finesse more. And, you know, some guy riders have much more finesse than others, and some are just, they're strong is the word that everybody uses. And it's strong in different sides. It's strong in that they look really, really tough, and they're really pushing in the back of that horse's neck and, you know, trying to make them, but is it always the best for the horse? Not necessarily. Just it depends on the horse and depends on the rider. And different horses get along with different riders.
You mentioned your dad, Wayne. He joined me on Trainer Talk a few months ago, and I had a chance to visit.
Fun.
It was one of the most fun shows that I've done. He's such a character, and he loves to have fun during the interview, right? And
oh yeah.
He did that, and it was so much fun. But you've always been kind of that girl among boys, because it's not just your dad, but all of your brothers are involved, and you might be what, the fifth member of the family to be a jockey?
I am. My dad was a jockey. His brother was a jockey. I have a couple uncles and a couple aunts who are also jockeys. Of my generation, I'm the only jockey. I'm the only one small enough. My brothers are much larger than me. But they still ride. They still gallop horses every day, and they have their trainer's license. They've been training horses on their own now. But, yeah, I grew up with my dad and my brothers. It's just, I played sports my whole life, and, you know, I don't know. I always ended up with the boys because they played better. The girls, they didn't play very good.
All right, so I mentioned your dad joining me on Trainer Talk, and I actually went back and I pulled a short clip of him talking about you and the boys and being able to be part of your life and your career, and I just want to play it for you. Here's what your dad had to say on that Trainer Talk show. Wayne, as a former rider, you know how dangerous that profession can be. What's it like for you as a dad to watch your kids? Of course, you had to watch the boys, but now you're there watching Taylor, to watch your little baby girl go out there and compete on the racetrack and ride races. What's that like for you as a dad?
I am fortunate enough that I am 54 years old and dead fit and still exercise and breeze horses every morning, that I have gotten to breeze horses with and against both Taylor, Kevin, and Adam recently, and it's enjoyable. And I don't have any fear. they're safer on a horse than they are driving a car down the highway. Absolutely to a T. That this game, the people we play with are all talented and professional, and they've got as much to lose as anybody else. And there's a bunch of artists out here playing with these horses that they're, I feel, are safer on a horse than they are anywhere. And I, yes, I understand the risks. All of my good friends are players in this game, and tragedies do happen. But I would rather them living life to the fullest and playing this game than just existing.
What's that mean to have your dad talk in those type of terms about you and your brothers?
No, it's awesome. I mean, my dad's my biggest fan, and he's, you know, always there supporting me for the whole way, and it has. I think that's been one of those things. I went away to college, so I was separated, you know, away from my family for those 4 years, and it's been a lot of fun and very, very rewarding to come back to the racetrack will be with all my family. And like he said, we do. There was one day at Prescott that they call me from over from there. I was in New York. And they say, you never know what I just watched. Your dad and both your brothers, they just broke a set from the gate and they're breezing down the lane. I said, it's only a race. Don't worry about it. and I, you know, I go over and visit, or I go over and ride races. My brother's called me a couple of times to go ride some races at Prescott. And, you know, first thing in the morning, this isn't sleeping for Taylor. I got to get up and go to the farm because they've got something for me to work. And, you know, my brother Kevin and I, we go out there, breeze a set, then I get on the pony and ride the pony the rest of the morning with my dad if I didn't have anything else to do. And it's just, it's really nice to be, you know, not everybody gets to spend, like, do their job, work, you know, the work that they do. I spend it with my family, and, you know, we my brothers are very talented. My dad, he amazes me every day. Like you said, he's 54 years old. The man goes out there, and he'll work 10 sets back to back to back and never even take a deep breath. And, you know, I can only hope I'm as active and healthy as he is by that age. And it's just, it's an awesome feeling for sure. I know I'm certainly blessed to be able to have spend my days like this.
Visiting with jockey Taylor Rice on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Taylor, let's face it, a portion of the proceeds from this show are given back to the PDJF. That's the official charity of HRRN. We do as much as we can to support them, which leads us to the point that, hey, being a jockey is a dangerous profession. There are those risks associated with that particular job. And your dad came out and said he feels like you're safer on a horse than driving a car down a highway. Do you feel that same way when you get a leg up?
My dad feels very strongly about that statement. And I mean, honestly, with the crazy people you have on the roads these days, whether they're texting and driving or this and that, I mean, this is me and an animal. And yes, the animal has its own mind, but you know, and we're also it's me and, you know, from anywhere from 6 to 10 other riders out there, we all have the same goal in mind. We're really, you know, and like you said, we have the same stuff to lose, you know, if we were to, say, make a mistake. And unfortunately, tragedies do happen, and there's nothing you can do about it as far as, you know, a horse maybe breaking down and everything. But we all really, I know for me, for sure, I try hard to do what's best for the horse. And, you know, you warm them up real good. You make sure they're feeling good. And you go out there and you still have to follow the rules. You ride your race, you ride tight, you know, you slide through this hole, you thrust through that hole. But, I mean, it's like we're all going for a common goal. And if somebody just, you know, wipes out the field, it's not going to, the end result's not going to be any good. If you just took out, because regardless, we're competitors. We are, I mean, absolutely competitors against each other. At the end of the day, when we all leave there, we're all still friends. We spend every day, all day long with each other. It's probably the closest group of people that I've been around in my life, and, you know, I've made really good friends with being a jockey. Is that at the end of the day, like, we are still friends and, all, you know, almost family, and you still have to look out for each other, and we all want to go home to our family. And, I mean, today, left and right, you never know what you're going to run into driving down the highway. It's I don't know. I do feel safe on a horse.
You know, experienced riders like John Velasquez and Javier Castellano have told me before that one of their responsibilities is to make sure that the young riders that come into the colony are focused on safety and doing things the right way, because it not only benefits them, but it benefits Johnny and Javier and you and Edgar Prado or whoever else might be out there in the race with them. And as you just mentioned, if a rider makes a mistake and takes out the whole field, well, that can lead to catastrophe, and nobody wants that. Are there certain programs in place within racing or even within the jockey colony, Taylor, that are geared toward educating young riders on the dangers and on riding safely?
Not necessarily like programs, but there are, I know the jockey school in Puerto Rico, they have learned a lot about that over the last couple of years, because there's been so many good riders come out of that I've ridden with. And they do a good job of, you know, teaching riders how to ride. But I think ultimately it comes down to, my experience was I did something in a race, whether they yelled at me in the race and then I come back and I'm like, uh-oh, you know. Or after the race, I've had Johnny, I've had Edgar Prado, I've had a couple of, you know, these, you know, Hall of Fame riders. They've pulled me aside and watched races with me and watched the video and watched that race that I rode and said, look, this is not the best decision. This really puts you in a bad spot, and explained to me, you know, different options. And I think it's really more within the jockey community that, like you said, it's his response. He feels it's his responsibility, and I feel the same way too. And anywhere I can help out, I learned so much. Like, I can remember my first race. I can remember my first 50 races. Before I left Prescott Downs, I had only ridden 89 races. And how I felt out there on the track and in a race and between horses was so much different than how I feel now. And because I remember all those pieces when there's a new rider that comes through, you know, I don't like to push myself on people, but if, you know, if they ask questions, I'm always there, you know, to lend, you know, the little bit of insight that I might have, because I kind of, you know, I might look at it a little differently than somebody else. But they really, you know, there's a bunch of great riders, and specifically Johnny and Edgar, as I've been in New York. Anybody who wants to learn how to ride, if they wander through the jockey's room, if they have any questions, those two are there to answer anything you want to hear. If you want help, you want to ride the Equitizer, you want this and that, they are, I mean, it's amazing. They're like two of the greatest ever. They always offer to help, but I think that's been the main thing is watching. And there's always somebody there that, you know, taps you on the shoulder as you're watching the replay and says, hey, look, that was not a smart decision. You put yourself in a really bad spot. Or, hey, maybe if you tried this a little bit, then, you know, you'd be able to wait a little longer. And watch the race. This part opened up here. You wouldn't have had to go up the rail and have to check. You wait three more strides. This, you know, the gap opens up and you have room to run. And then just the reminder of, listen, we're all out here together. And if you do that, you're putting the rest of us in danger, and you've just got to ride smarter. And with experience, it, you know, just riding races, it really, all the different pieces slow down and you're able to understand and be able to control everything better. But it comes with numbers of races, I think.
Outside of the names you just mentioned that have helped you when you've been in New York, when you first started riding, who were some of the jockeys that kind of took you under their wing and kind of helped you the most?
Well, I was a little bit of a rebel in the sense that I wasn't really sure how to ask for help in the beginning. But when I was at Prescott, Willie Martinez, he's a ride there. Whenever you see something, he lend me a little bit of advice, and he wasn't sure how to tell me because I'm a pretty strong personality. They weren't sure how they could tell me to, like, suggest things to me and how I would take it. And, you know, I'm open ears for everything, and I'll try it, you know. And one day he pulled me aside, and he was explaining to me a different way to swing my whip. And, you know, the next race I went out and I did what he had explained to me, and he comes back and he's like, wow, Taylor, he's like, that was, he's like, you did it right. Like, that was great. because that could take people forever to try to figure that out, or, you know, I got to keep reminding them and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm looking for help, you know, I'm just not sure how to ask for it. And but he was at Prescott when I was there. When I went to Chicago, there was a guy named Marlon St. Julian. He always would watch my replays with me as I'm going, and, you know, give me that pat on the back when I'd win, and then, you know, I'd lose. He, you know, pick your head up. You're all right. What could you do different? He'd look at the race and then ask me, and I'm watching, and I don't know. He's like, watch again. What could you have done, you know, better? And really, these jockeys rooms, like, we're all competitors, but at the end of the day, it's a small family in there, and everybody's trying to help everybody.
You mentioned being a bit of a rebel when you first broke into riding. What's the most important lesson that you had to learn when you first started?
And I guess I say being a rebel just in that I wanted to learn, but I wasn't sure how to ask for it. So I just kind of, you know, I would talk to my dad and I would talk to my brothers and they would tell me, but my dad was the only one that ridden. My brothers had never ridden, but we watched plenty of races, so we were trying to figure it out. But I think the biggest thing I learned was probably might have been just sitting back and being more patient and actually listening and watching. And, you know, like the guys around me, if they said something to me, it wasn't always because they were trying to get after me, like they're trying to help, and, you know, they're saying this stuff because, you know, you're not seeing it. I was a couple of times I would be on the rail and we're heading into the turn and I'm not getting in the hole and I'm not taking back and I'm just in a bad spot. And I had a couple of guys tell me, you know, a couple different times in a row, they're like, look, you know. And then finally the one day they weren't going to help me anymore. They just kind of shaved me off and let it happen. Let the race play it out. And I got myself in a really bad spot. And they're like, listen, we've tried to tell you that something bad is going to happen and you're not paying attention and you've got to, you know, decide. And I think it was, you know, that it's, with mounts, you know, the more you ride, the more everything slows down and the more I could deal with those different pieces and be able to make better decisions out there in the race. But, and the next thing was just, you know, keep working hard. So everybody would tell you, you run into Johnny, you run into Edgar, Willie Martinez, you keep your head down, just keep working hard. The opportunities will come. You'll get it figured out. You messed up this time. It's okay. Try hard again next time. And it seemed to have done me well so far.
How has Taylor Rice improved as a jockey over the past couple of years?
I think more just, like you said, with numbers of mounts, I'm just able to analyze the whole race more. I think in the beginning, like I said, I was just trying to, you know, keep the horse happy and it worked out. I would find myself in a comfortable position and then go from there. But now I'm able to, you know, read the form better and see what horses are around me and be able to look up and see, you know, what horses are in front of me. Oh, that's a horse that, you know, maybe cheap speed and it's probably going to stop. Oh, that's a favorite on the front. I better not let him get too far away because, you know, if it's the favorite, he's probably going to just run away. I better stay close to him. You know, it's just being able to analyze all the pieces and make it successful. It's been a long time coming, but I feel like I'm getting there. Still got a lot to learn though.
Yeah, it sounds like to me that the mental part of the game has been the area where you've seen the most improvement, not just the physical part.
I think physical comes with, you know, just riding. You know, I've ridden the Equisizer, you know, with guys around, you know, to give you little pointers, and you ride horses and you breathe horses, and so your physical comes with it. But you definitely, you could be as strong as you want to be and have all the horse, but if you make the wrong decisions, you're not going to get anywhere. You got to be able to, you know, be mentally strong and be patient when you need to, be aggressive when you need to, and you know your opponent, I think has been a lot of different pieces.
Do you spend a lot of time studying other riders, or is it more about studying the other horses in the past performances and the racing form?
I think it's more about the horses. You do notice trends in riders that, you know, I pay attention to as we're watching races. You'll just, notice if there's a certain guy that, you know, he likes to go to the front and rides a lot of speed horses, or you've got guys that they're just, I remember when I first started out in Presque Isle, you had Mario Pino, Hall of Fame. He would just sit in the back, and you never know he was back there, and then he would just come flying out of the clouds and catch you at the wire, and he just, you know, zoomed through traffic like it was no big deal. It was amazing, and no matter what, like, that's what he was going to do, and he was going to win, and you had to figure out how to beat him, and it wasn't easy, but I think I analyze more of the horses, but you put a little asterisk next there, or in my brain for the jockey too. It's like, oh, you have a speed horse, or the rider likes to go to the front. He's no questions about it. He's going to be out there.
Jockey Taylor Reich joining us here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So much more to get to. We're going to do it in the second half of the program. Taylor, can you stick around for a little bit? We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with more.
All right,
Taylor Reich here on Jock Talk, and we're going to get into a lot of different things in the second half, including her stint at Florida State. That's right, she's a Seminole. We'll tell you all about it next here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Get ready for the third annual Jockeys and Jeans charity event to benefit the PDJF, coming to Gulfstream Park on Sunday, February 28th. Last year, Jockeys and Jeans raised more than $200,000 to benefit permanently disabled riders, and you can help make this year's event even bigger. Meet and mingle with an all-star cast of jockeys, including Lafitte Pinkai Jr., Georgie Velasquez, Pat Day, Randy Romero, and many more. Tickets go on sale at the beginning of January, and donations and sponsorship can be purchased starting December 7th. For more information, visit jockeysandjeans.com.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Pena, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Good evening, everyone. This is Corey Johnson for the weekly JockeyTalk360.com update. Last week, the highlight of the racing action was at Gulfstream Park with Saturday's Flaming Crown. And historically, when there's a big racing event, jockey Javier Castellano excels. Castellano won four stakes races on Saturday's card and was named the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week for last week. Another great week for jockey Javier Castellano, who's running away with the earnings title this year for leading jockey. Looking to the week ahead, there is a big event, and it's Sunday at Remington Park. Jockey Cliff Berry, who's won over 4,400 races, will retire from race riding. Berry, one of the class athletes in any sport, has won titles at Remington Park, Oakland Park, Lone Star Park, Louisiana Downs, and others. He's been a dominant force over the last 20 or 30 years in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas. And he is absolutely a first-class ambassador for our sport. So best of luck to Cliff Berry after this Sunday. And I heard he's quite a good guitar player, so I'm sure that he'll be looking at a second career then. It is December, and it's time for Christmas. So for the racing fan in your life, I've got two ideas for you. And both of these benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. First of all, there's a book, Ride to Win, An Inside Look at the Jockey's Craft, written by Gary West and Bob Fortas. They interviewed 100 jockeys, trainers, agents, and owners about what it's like to be a jockey, and their book gives tremendous insight into a jockey's craft. As a matter of fact, Jim Mulvihill, who's the director of media relations at the NTRA, said, Ride to Win is the definitive work on the craft of race riding. Also, the Jockeys Guild has come out with some jockey trading cards. And those trading cards are 150 cards, Hall of Famers, George Wolfe Award winners, Eclipse Award winners. All your top jockeys are in those trading cards. And you can order both of these gifts, the Ride to Win book or the trading cards, at jockeytalk360.com. And they're both $20 each, plus shipping and handling. So there's a good way to take care of any Christmas gifts you have for that racing fan in your list. This is Corey Johnson with another report for Jockey Talk 360.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Like to make our guests feel right at home when they appear on Jock Talk, and we thought, Taylor, maybe that would help a little bit as we continue our visit with Taylor Rice, a graduate of Florida State. Little Seminole War chant for you.
That's always great.
You went there 4 years, right?
Oh yeah, graduated in 2010.
Is it still all about the garnet and gold for you?
Oh yeah.
Did you play any sports when you were at Florida State?
I didn't play, like, for the university. I played intramurals and stuff, but I didn't end up playing. D1 school, I was a little for their league.
What other sports did you play when you were growing up? I know, I think softball was one, wasn't it?
We were state runners-up my senior year of high school in softball, but I played volleyball, basketball, and softball all through high school.
Wow. What position?
I was an outfielder in softball. By the end of my softball career, I ended up in the outfield. And I was a shooting guard, point guard-ish in basketball. And then, what are they called? Defensive specialists in volleyball.
Wow. Do the other jockeys bring you in as like a ringer when they do the jockey basketball against the trainers up there in Saratoga? Yeah.
We finally won this year, so that was great.
Taylor Rice on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. So when you were attending Florida State, was it difficult to kind of maintain that focus sometimes because you were so into horse racing, or did you have to distance yourself from horse racing a little bit?
Well, growing up, we actually were not really involved with the racetrack itself. We did thoroughbreds, but my dad did yearlings to two-year-olds, and then we sold them at the two-year-old training sale. So I maybe have visited a racetrack maybe three times that I can really remember over my childhood. And then I graduated high school, and I was off to college. I didn't think another thing about horses. I was going away. I was going to school. I was out of there. I got into Florida State, where I always wanted to go, and away I went. I was the oldest, so then my next brother graduated 2 years behind me, and he had begun galloping horses while he was finishing high school. And that my dad hit. The year after I graduated from high school, my dad went back to the racetrack. My first year of college, he was going to race horses because the economy was a little bad. And he couldn't, he wasn't being able to sell them like he thought he should at the sales. He said, I can make more money winning races. So he went back to the races, which he had done, prior to me being born. Everybody was at the racetrack. And from there, my brothers followed. While I was in school and on breaks in between semesters, my last 2 years, I went to Prescott Island and visited for a week. My dad and both my brothers and a couple aunts and a couple cousins and everybody is all at the racetrack. And I helped everybody out. I worked. I ponied some horses in the morning. I ponied the races in the afternoon, which I'd never done before. And I come home with a nice little pocket of money. And I was like, okay, that was nice. I graduated college, and I needed a job. And the economy was still no good. And all of my friends, everybody I graduated with, nobody was working in their field. They graduated with the degree they graduated with. Nobody was working in their field. And there just weren't any jobs to be had. So I went home. And I was like, okay, I don't know. I needed a job, and I was getting paid for it. So I'm like, man, this is easy. I'm like, you guys are paying me good money to do, the same stuff I've been doing my whole life. Like, this stuff's easy. And I was a little heavier when I graduated college. But, within no time of being on the track, everybody came, oh, when are you going to be a jockey? When are you going to be a jockey? And I'm like, I'm not going to be a jockey. I'm just, here and... I kind of put them all off by, if I can lose the weight, I'll be there and I'll ride eventually. I'm not in a hurry, which I wasn't. I'd never, not to say that I'd never really thought about it, but it wasn't ever a plan in my head. My dad never pushed me or any of my brothers to get into horses. He really wanted all of us to go to college. I was the only one that went. My brothers didn't go. They got hooked on horses. But I think it runs in our blood, so I think it was inevitable I was going to make my way back to it eventually.
Yeah, he told me when he joined me on Trainer Talk that was one thing that he definitely wanted. He wanted you kids to go to college and get that education, and I know he was extremely proud of you when you did and that you went through Florida State and graduated.
Yep, it was definitely a big deal to him. He was preparing for our college, for a long time.
That's remarkable. So many jockeys that have come on this program have talked about how, this is all they've ever known. They grew up in a racing family and they were around the horses. They were getting on horses and, galloping horses. And then it just led into them and their new career as a jockey. But for you, it was so much different because you weren't really thinking that direction as you were growing up. You go to college and then even after that, you weren't really 100% sold that this is what you wanted to do.
No, because like I said, I really had no knowledge, no real knowledge of horse racing and what it was, which is kind of crazy because I come from a racing family. Everybody in my family is a part of this business in one form or another. But you know, and I've heard the stories and I've seen the pictures, and, you know, obviously my Aunt Linda has trained my entire life. She's been in New York, at, you know, a trainer at the racetrack. I came and visited her one time with my cousin. We came to Belmont, and, you know, we saw it all then when I was about 15. But it was definitely, I've ridden horses and I love horses and I know, you know, so much about them, and working with them is just, like, I love to ride horses. And once I got to the track and I started galloping and then everybody, you know, from galloping, I'm small. That leads right into breezing horses too. And and so I'm breezing horses. It's like, wow. It's like, you know, I like to go fast. And I'm watching the races. And then I'm like, okay, well, these guys can't be any smarter than I am. Like, this can't be that tricky. You know, I think I could get this figured out. And, you know, watch more races and just keep working and keep breezing horses. And I was in Ocala, and I couple winters I broke babies, getting, you know, prepping them for the sale and for the races, and getting out of the starting gate, you know, we would breed horses in groups of, you know, three and four, and it just, you know, race simulating, you know, sorts of things, and it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it, and I'm an adrenaline, you know, competitive, you know, competition is just, it's, you're a rice, you're competitive. There's no way of getting around it. And the other part, I looked at it, like I said, I went to college, but I wasn't anywhere near big enough to compete with the girls that they had playing, you know, the sports I love. And this was a sport where everybody was the same size as me. Like, I'd never been around that before in my life. I'd always competed against, you know, bigger people. And I'm like, wait a minute, this has got to be easier than, you know, than this other stuff I've been trying to do. I mean, these guys are the exact same size as me. So sure enough, here I end up, and I come from a long line of, you know, a very competitive, want to do good, and you know, they're going to make me the best at it because they, you know, kind of help me out any way they can, and this, here I am.
Well, in the first half of the program, you mentioned that you can vividly remember your first race, which, by the way, turned out pretty well for that debut effort. Take me back to that day and tell me all about coming up to your first race. What was it like that day, maybe the night before? Did you get any sleep? And then walk me through the race.
Well, fortunately, I'm not a very nervous person, so it wasn't like I was losing sleep or anything, you know, over it, but I was excited for sure. My Aunt Kitty Cheeks, she had pushed me over the summer. She says, even if you don't ride right away, get your approval and get your approval for your license here at Prescott, where everybody knows you and you've been putting the work in. So then, you know, when you do decide to ride, you can, you know, you don't have to have so, it won't have to be so difficult. And I had spent 1 month, an entire month, every afternoon I stood on the end of the starting gate and watched the races break every race for a month straight. And that was very interesting. But that's what the starter at the time, that's what he wanted me to do before he would approve me for my license. I had to be approved by the starter. And so I had done that for a month. I got my approval. I breezed horses breaking from the gate. The stewards watched. They gave me the approval, and then, so my brother, he's looking, and he says, well, you got your approval, you're ready to ride? I'm like, I guess so. And he says, all right, call my grandpa, and he says, we're putting her in. Says, okay, we had to take the stewards wanted to approve my first two horses also. I had to take my trainer and the horse I wanted to ride, with the horse I wanted to ride. We had to go to the stewards. I had to go to the stewards with them, and they had to approve the horse that I was going to ride, which that was, you know, interesting, a little extreme. But, you know, they just wanted, I don't know, I guess they wanted to make sure.
Yep.
And so we went in, and we entered in my first horse, and the day before, I had took my, well, that week before, I had been taking my jockey saddle into the track, and I was putting it on some of the horses I was galloping so that I could get used to the stirrups and the saddle and everything. And that day before, I even went and put on my jockey pants because everybody's like, oh, they're so slippery, and you're going to feel like you're going to fall off the horse. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I don't want to feel like that. I'm like, let me figure this out. Let me try this out, see what it's going to be like. And I had put on my jock pants, and I went around the shed row in the barn on one of my brother's horses with my jockey saddle on. And it was funny because we're in there, and I said, you know, I never saddled a horse before, especially not from the off side. My brother and I were putting the saddle on. He's, you know, a trainer, so he had saddled plenty. I'm like, I don't know how to do this, pulling these girths like this. And it was a struggle just for me to get the saddle on in the first place. And I'm like, okay, you know, these new spandex girths and everything. And it was certainly an adventure, that's for sure.
Wow.
But we got out there, and the mare that I rode, I'd been galloping her and everything in the morning, you know, on and off to help my brother out. So I knew the filly very well. And she was all speed. One of the fastest horses my brother has broke from the gate, and a couple of the other jockeys too. She is so fast out of the gate. Just hold on, you know, don't get in her mouth, and just, you know, let her run. Try to sit nice and easy. And that's what happened. I broke, and I was on the lead, and they, you know, just waiting. I made the turn in like the 3 or 4 pass, and everybody picked on me after that. They said, well, where were you going? When I turned for home, I was out in at least a 5 pass. In my mind, and I tried to explain it to them, I said, I thought I was close to the rail. Looking back on it, when you're an exercise rider, that was close to the rail as an exercise rider.
Yep.
Because you're not supposed to be down there. But as a jockey, you know, and 2 years later now, I'm like, wow, you know, everything's so much closer and so much tighter now with, you know, the rider next to you, the rail inside of you. And it's just, it's funny because I really, in my head, I really thought I was down plenty close to the rail. But I'll go back and watch it, and I just shake my head.
Well, you just tell them, hey, I was much the best. I was keeping the horse out of trouble. What more do you want? I won the race for you.
Oh, yeah. But that was... And I had turned for home, and Willie Martinez was behind me, outside of me. And it was when we first turned for home, he goes, hey, wait for me. And then he's like, you got it, Taylor. Just keep riding. And because he had no shot of catching me.
That's
and
great.
It was a really awesome day. That was my first race, my first winner. My brother trained it. My grandfather was the owner. And, you know, my dad and everybody, all my friends and family were there, my mom. Got to fly into town, and she was there for it, and so it was a very special day.
So you could actually hear Willie behind you kind of cheering you on once he found out that his horse wasn't going to catch you?
Yep.
Wow. Does that happen a lot where jockeys will talk to each other during a race?
There are plenty of times where, you know, we there are words exchanged. You're not out there having a conversation, but there's, you know, every now and then. I remember a couple winters ago, but I had my bug, and there was another rider and I, and we were in the back of the pack going around there, and we're going down the backside, and both of us are just, you know, it's the dead of winter, and we're trying to ride our horses, and we're not getting anywhere very fast. We both looked over each other, and, you know, we're both just trying to figure out something we could do. Everybody else is running away from us. And he looks over at me, and he goes, I'll bet you a Coke. He said, what? He says, okay, so which one of us is going to win between the two of us in the back of the pack? We can't catch anybody else. We're going around there. Oh, he's like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And it's really, I don't know, some days you got to make, you know, you make the best of it. There are times, most recently, I was on the lead, and John Velasquez was outside of me. And my saddle, somewhere how my boot was positioned on my saddle, and how I was sitting trying to hold my horse and make him relax, my boot kept moving and squeaking. Every time my horse would take a stride, it would squeak, it would squeak, it would squeak. And he looked over at me and goes, man, you're making a lot of noise.
Just, during the race.
Like, I can't make it stop. And we went on around the corner, you know, and when we got off the horses, he's like, what the world? I said, I don't know. I kept trying to move my boot. No matter where I put it, it kept squeaking on my saddle.
That's outstanding.
In the beginning, I had no idea who, you know, everything, all the pieces were moving so fast. But now, like, you know who's next to you. You know the rider. You know who's in front of you. And words are exchanged. But it's, like I said, it's not like you're out there having a conversation. Everybody's sitting quiet because sometimes you don't want them to know where you are. So you try and sit nice and quiet, maybe right there behind them or even right there next to them and hope they're not paying attention to you. Maybe you can sneak up on them. So.
Which jockey does the most talking during the race?
Like I said, it's not really like, every now and then talking is left mostly for like corrective. It's kind of like your horn, on your car. Like, you don't drive around all day. Well, New Yorkers kind of drive around all day honking your horn, but most people don't drive around just honking your horn. Like, but if somebody is, they're coming over in your lane, you honk your horn. And then if in the race, if somebody's putting you a little tight, maybe they aren't really like, hey, I'm here. That's really mainly what your words are saved for in a race. It's not really like you're going around there saying much. I know they used to say that Rosemary Holmeister, when they would leave the gate, she would just like scream, and freak everybody out. And when I rode with her, she didn't do much of that. And I guess I've heard stories of different riders doing different things. Sometimes it's all a part of the plan and for distraction and this and that. But for the most part, nobody's really saying too much out there.
All right. So many times when I've interviewed jockeys for different programs, they'll tell me that we'll hear the term chirping. I chirped at him, or I smooched at him, right? Is there a difference between chirping and smooching?
I don't really think so. I think it's a term. I think it's a, you're
what's
doing
it sound
the same
like?
Thing.
What's it sound like?
Like you're smooching. Like you're kissing, make a kissy face.
Yep.
Like, yeah. It's all the same. I think it's just the term that you use, or different people were taught.
Okay, because we'll hear that. I mean, in a lot of interviews, even on television, not just on radio, jockeys will use that term. And I think sometimes people go, well, what exactly does that mean? And what is the purpose of that, Taylor?
Well, that starts, for me, that starts in the very beginning when a horse is being trained. But not every horse is trained the same way. And so that's like a response. Or a signal. Like you whistle for your dog to come to you. Mm-hmm. That's like a signal for horses for them to move in a certain direction. And we use it to go to make the horse accelerate and to go forward. It was always you would smooch at them. Whether like it's instead of using the whip, we use it together to. I guess, the best way for me to describe it is like your dog. You have your dog on a leash. You want them to come to you. So, you're saying, come here, or you're whistling to them, and you're telling them to come to you. Or the horse, you smooch to them, and you get them to move away from you or move forward. You squeeze them with your legs, and you smooch them at the same time, and they learn that you want them to go forward. You tap them with a whip, and you smooch to them, and they learn that you want them to go forward. Like, but there's a lot of horses, depending on where they were trained and how they were trained, that it doesn't always have the same effect. They some of them don't know what that means. My ones that are broke by my brothers and my family, you walk by them and you smooch at them and they're moving somewhere. Like normally it's forward. If they can't go forward, they're going to move somewhere because that's what they were taught.
Right.
You'll hear some guys, I know if you stand down on the rail, sometimes you can hear them, that they'll be out there and like, I guess when you're racing, you're looking for anything to help you get that extra edge. I swear I had a guy tell me I had to bark at a horse one time. He said because that's how they would bring them in at the farm they were at. They had a little dog, and the dog would come out, and he'd be ruff, 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 ruff. And he's like, you got to figure out how to bark. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like, are you sure? And he just, and I, you know, I'm out there, and I'm going down the lane, and I've hit him, and I've switched sticks, and I've gone this, and I'm like, okay, this isn't working. You know, what else? And I just, like, you'll hear the jockeys there, yeah. They're like, scream at him a little bit and try something else, and maybe sometimes I think they do it ending up just to, like, distract the other jockey, because it will make you, like, you'll hesitate for a second and go, uh-oh, did something happen? Did something go on behind? Like, did I go somewhere? Did I do something?
Right.
It might make you hesitate from your down riding to see what's going on around you. But also there are some horses where it's kind of a scare tactic in the sense that, well, if somebody's yelling behind you, you might run faster too.
Did you bark? Did you actually bark at the horse?
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But I did. Another funny one was that I forget the horse's name. It was like Joe. They called him Joey or something like Joey. And they said, if you talk to him, come on, Joey. And he'll run. He runs for it like that. You know, and when owners and trainers, when they tell you to do stuff, you know, you got to kind of go out there and try it. I at least try it, you know. And we were going down the lane, and I turned for home, and I'm like, come on, Joey, let's get going. Come on. And I mean, we didn't run any good, but I tried. I didn't bark, but I did, you know, I did talk to the other one. I couldn't do the barking, but I did talk to the other one. So.
Wow. Taylor Rice here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Taylor, just about time to wrap this one up, but we have about a minute left or so, but I always like to end by asking jockeys to tell us something about them that people might not know. So when Taylor Rice is not at the races, what other things do you enjoy doing?
I love sports. I really love sports. If I wasn't in New York all year long, I would be playing volleyball somewhere on some beach. That's what I used to do all the time, and that's where my, you know, if it wasn't a love for riding horses, it's a love for playing something, and that's what I like. I love to do. We have a softball league here at the track too. We had a team of jockeys. We won the backside championship this year. We did. The jockeys finally won.
Wow.
Playing softball, and if it's something. Whatever sport it is you want to play, I'm ready to play.
Wow. Taylor Rice, so much fun, and we could go another hour easily, Taylor. But as I said, we do have to kind of wrap this up. But really do appreciate the visit, appreciate the time, and so many great stories. And we'll have to do part two up the road when you get rolling here and pick up that first graded stakes win. I know it's coming soon.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Taylor, thanks so much. Appreciate the visit.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Taylor Rice. Jock Talk presented by Tito's. Wow. So much fun. So much energy. You can tell why she's been successful in just a couple of years, and there's far bigger things up the road for Taylor Rice, no doubt about that. Keep an eye on her. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the program, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast will be available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can also access us on iTunes, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. We're back next week with another brand new edition of Jock Talk. But for now, for my producer, Lee Delapina, for our special guest, Taylor Rice, I am Mike Pena, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.